And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show. Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
Roger, TV circuit breakers in. At base 5 square. Roger. And we're getting a picture on the TV.
Do it again!
Yeah, go for it.
Welcome to the House of Strauss podcast. We are making our triumphant and glorious return with our favorite guest, Amin El Hassan. Amin, people wanted this. There were demands. There was angst. There was anger. They had not done a podcast in a while because of the vacation. I know you've been privy to some of this. Were you shocked at some of our fans really just thinking that they have full ownership of our time and just can make these demands of us?
I mean, they're not my fans.
Mm. Nate Jones is your fan. Yeah. Nate Jones, I'm convinced Nate Jones will not listen to this podcast unless you're the guest. That's my assumption.
he is. I mean, he did ask you, when is the pod coming back? Mm. And then you then added, we're recording on Thursday and Amin's going to be on. So to be fair, he did ask you about your podcast. He didn't ask when is Amin going to be back on the pod.
To be even clearer, he did it on a group text that you were also on. So there were insinuations. Yeah. The medium is the message, is what I'm saying.
Okay, what's it, Marshall McLuhan? Is that the guy who did that?
Ooh,
old Canadian guy. I'm Canadian and I have thoughts. That's what I always think about Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah. I have 1960s thoughts on where this is all headed and what this all means. Well, I mean, do you feel pressure when you think about friendships, when you think about the media right now? Waz, our friend Waz, is leaving The Athletic. I knew about this. I hope he finds joy and fulfillment at The Ringer. But now I see this avalanche on social media of people saying things, and I'm feeling like, well, I texted him about it. Now I feel this weird pressure. Do I have to make some public display for Waz? Oh, is that something?
No, you don't. You don't, because he knows, and that's all that matters, is that he knows. They say, oh, like, Ethan, I didn't get a harumph out of you. Is that what the people are saying?
Yeah. No, nobody's saying it. I just feel like I'm watching the harumphs, like the congratulations harumphs.
I'll be perfectly honest. Like, my public congratulations to Waz, even though I talked to him privately, has less to do about congratulating Waz and more to do with glorifying what we're doing, right? Because, I am patting myself on the back. And I think Waz knows it. Like, it's not again. What? I mean, I thought that was. I mean, obviously, I'm happy for him, but he knows that because I told him. So when I say out loud, when we started our thing years ago, my goal was for everyone to get jobs and be recognized for their billions of cold, hard American cash. Happy and proud of my brother Waz. That's me letting people know, like, we did this thing. We found these people. We found Trey. We found Waz. We found Rob Lopez, who I believe is also leaving to get a job somewhere. We found these people. They came in with their own talents, yes. We developed them on some level. And most importantly, we put them on a platform where people would know who they are and want to pay them for their services. And so you know, we're not Le Batard Show and we're not Bill Simmons and we're not Colin Cowherd. But I think we've done a pretty good job of being like, I don't know if you want to call it a farm system or whatever. An incubator, there you go. That when people in media are looking for the next big thing, come holler at us. Because we have a pretty good track record with the people that we've placed just by giving them an opportunity to do their job.
Yeah, I think it speaks well of certain instincts. I can't take credit for any of it. I think that you have more of an eye for it. I'm looking at the responses right now. Tim McMahon, Bam McMahon, when Waz says that he's leaving the best job that he ever had, Band says, isn't The Athletic the only job you ever had? And then adds the congrats. He's the Tim McMahon. He is the noogie man of social media in our social circle, where he's just going to razz you. There's going to be a little bit of a razz on Twitter right there.
Which by the way, makes the whole Bontemps Winhurst podcast episode all the more hilarious, right? Is that like, there was exacerbation going on and Tim McMahon was kind of an innocent bystander just watching?
So such an odd place for him to be, to be the straight man in that brawl. Very unexpected. For those who do not know, it did go viral, but maybe you do not know if you're listening. Brian Windhorst, Tim Bontemps on ESPN's podcast that Tim McMahon was also on, had a knockdown, drag-out fight over the relative merits of Jokic's MVP case and injuries. And really the details itself I've lost track of. It was so arcane. I mean, I remember I actually played it for my wife and she made a face of, this is the type of stuff men argue about.
She's absolutely right.
Just these weird details of it's granular to the point of absurdity and to what purpose. But what was funny about that to me, Amin, was that it was interesting to see how it was received among sports fans and people on Twitter and everybody else versus what we know, what I know, which is that those two guys are friends. If you're out late at night after a game, that is how Bontemps will vigorously argue. That is how he's doing it. It's not meant to be personal. And it was funny to see, much like our arguments, a lot of people go, oh, these guys hate each other.
I won't say they hate each other, but like that one was different. You acknowledge that, right? They were legitimately pissed on that day. That wasn't the regular, back and forths.
Yeah, well, he did say he was so angry with him. I mean, maybe Timmy Goodtimes is just more in touch with his emotions and he can recognize that. Kind of like Kenny Power is shouting that he's really angry right now and can't control the sound of his own voice. But yeah, it was entertaining, though. I mean, Howard Stern has said that the best radio is argument. And I quite enjoyed it. But it was interesting to me that the assumption from that is that things are just so much worse behind the scenes. I felt a little bit like how the athletes get defensive when they have some sort of argument during a game and it becomes a viral moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly the comp, right? The comp is guys yell at each other on the sideline like, ooh, trouble in paradise. Ooh, he's going to be on the trade block soon. Ooh, he's leaving in free agency. And, you know, the reality is that happens all the time in practice.
Yeah.
So I've seen the best of friends literally choke each other out. Literally choke each other out. And these guys are great friends. So
Wait, is this in an NBA context or was this a live show? What happened?
No, like in practice, I'll say it doesn't matter. Both these guys are long retired and they're friends. Rajah Bell and Leandro Barbosa. I've seen them actually fight. And it's like, that's the point, man. Like that stuff happens. It happens a lot more commonly than I think people either imagine or would allow themselves to imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like, you know, we move on. And that's why a lot of stuff isn't reported. Because if you report it, then people lose their mind and they want to make it a talking point, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, if they never know about it, like those guys, like 20 minutes later, are like, ah, like joking around. That's how it is, man. This stuff ain't serious. Always. Sometimes it is serious.
It can be.
It can be. I'm not saying that every time it's not serious, but I'm saying a lot of times it isn't. And that's why you never hear about it.
Yeah. If somebody had a camera on you all the time and, you know, the standard marriage, the standard good marriage, you could find an excerpt that would make it look like a not very good marriage. Like because people fight, they have feuds. If you're in close quarters and you've got a million decisions that you're having to make collectively, there's going to be some friction. But it is interesting. You're bringing up the practice space. Well, first, let's do a little detour. What were Barbosa and Rajabel even fighting over? I can't even imagine Barbosa fighting.
It doesn't matter. That's how you know. That's like to your wife's point. These are the things that men argue about. Who knows? Hey, man, stop pushing off. Hey, man, stop complaining. Like, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. It wasn't like a long brewing, like, anger that then eventually boiled over and erupted at a practice leading into fisticuffs. No, it was just like guys competing in a drill and competition gets the best of you. And at least in the case of Raja, Raja's one of the nicest people I know. One of the great gentlemen. He does a great job on the Real Ones podcast with him and Logan Murdock. But Raja Bell also, if you give him a basketball, turns into a maniac. He's like a raging maniac. Mm. And so, like, it happens.
Little known fact.
Nobody broke up the fight. That's my favorite thing. Nobody broke it up. You're like, just let them burn each other out.
Little known fact. Latrell Sprewell would choke PJ Carlissimo after every practice. It was just that one time it got out.
I gotta say, that joke is a little less comfortable for me now that I'm friends with PJ Carlissimo.
Oh, yeah. You know? Hey, we're not saying it was right. It's too soon. We're not saying it was right.
I know. It's just like one of those things where it's like once upon a time. Like, PJ Carlissimo, Charles Freeman jokes, where do I sign up? And now it's like,
Well, it reminds me of the Aaron Sorkin quote about seasickness, how it feels like you're going to die and everybody else thinks it's kind of funny, which I usually think about more in a social media shame context. But people are very amused with some of these stories because they were not in the physical altercation. Everybody always wants to bring up around Steve Kerr, hey, remember when Michael Jordan punched you?
He punched, yeah.
He doesn't want to talk about that.
Does he not?
I don't – at least
– Are you just assuming?
No, I've seen the reaction is not one of, I can't wait to talk about this. I think he started to realize over time that – he's kind of a big deal and famous himself as the coach of the Warriors. And now he can have
protect the brand.
But, yeah.
But or the opposite. You're saying, I got you.
I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that he knows he can have fun with that story, but probably in the aftermath of it as a role player who had been punched by Michael Jordan, that wasn't the type of thing you would want to wear.
Right. Exactly. No, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Right. But like, this is what I would say. Even if he rolls his eyes now, I think it's just because he's had to tell that story so many times. Not necessarily. It's an embarrassing moment in my life that I choose not to relive.
Hmm. Well, so. I think it also now can be shaped into this idea of, well, I'm a fighter too. And it kind of works for him. But I'm more related to how, if you're in a physical altercation that you were in, that's something that was very real. But to other people, it's this abstract, funny story as long as you didn't die, right? And so, you know, I'd imagine that PJ Carlissimo relates to it the same way.
I would say the opposite a little bit sometimes, where, for instance, if you're Michael Jordan, I mean, if you're Steve Kerr, Michael Jordan puts you in the eye, but overall you have generally positive feelings on Michael Jordan. And then The Last Dance comes up and some people are trying to apply 21st century sensibilities to something that happened in 1997 or whatever. It's like, I don't want this guy to be like, I don't want people to paint him in this way or whatever. It's not that I personally have a problem with that story. I think it's hilarious, but I know that some people are going to take this. And it's like, it's the reason why I stopped telling Shaq stories, by the way.
Mm.
Because I realized some of these stories aren't just funny anecdotes. Just, oh, Shaq's so funny and silly. Some of these anecdotes are taken by people to show that, see, Shaq, he's a bully. How could he do such a thing? And well, I don't want that.
There's a misalignment. And I think we've maybe talked about it offline, if not in public, about the NBA Twitter hive mind sensibilities and what the actual athlete world is like. You know, it's a culture that's undergirded by it's kill or be killed, right? It's you're going to get shipped off to Europe or China or whatever if you don't perform. So even if there's a lot of humor, there's a lot of jokes, it's also a hard world and it has its own culture and its own sensibility. And if you take some of what happens within that world and you show, ironically, the people who are the biggest fans of the product that the world generates, they're going to be quite judgmental. They're not going to like how the sausage is made.
No, absolutely not. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. That's a real thing. That's when I first started writing, Ethan, when I first came straight out of front office life and into media life. Like, I learned that very quickly because I would tell people things that they didn't want to hear. And I realized, oh, like, this is like, I have to do this carefully. I have to reveal these things with some delicacy, because if I just snatch the curtain, it literally will make their minds explode.
Yeah.
Either because they had no idea it was this complex, or they had no idea that it was this downright dirty and rotten.
Yeah. I did a podcast around The Last Dance coming out. We were discussing some of this, and they weren't NBA reporters. They more do politics and media. And I was talking about how interesting that scene was, that great scene where Michael Jordan is talking about how he played the game and he cries at the end. And it just shows this montage of all the winning and the champagne and the smiling faces of all these guys that don't like Michael Jordan, whether it's Krause or you can go down the list. And my friend on the podcast goes, well, yeah, but Steve Kerr likes Michael Jordan. And I didn't say it. I more said, but I more said, like, what would make you assume that? Like, other than you want to believe that.
Right. It's more about, because I think, again, it goes back to people think that everybody on a team are friends. Like, Scotty and Michael weren't friends. They were coworkers, man. Like, these people show up to work. They do, like, are you friends with everyone you work with? I'm not saying, are you enemies with everyone you work with? I'm just saying, are you friends with them? Right? There's plenty of people you're cordial with, you're friendly with, but wouldn't call them friends. Right? I'm trying to think of someone in the media right now that I was like, I know that person.
Blah, blah, blah. I think media people are more likely to be friends with one another. But if you change the dynamic, and all our salaries were public.
Were public.
And we're on Hoops Hype.
Look, there are people that I have sneaking suspicions make more than me that I'm kind of like, really? But like, it's not that. Like, I'm going to try and pick a name. Here's a name. I would say, Ben Golliver.
Respect
his work. I've been saying hellos, hey, how's it going? Da da da. Have been at a bar at the same time he was there with a bunch of other media people. But I won't call him my friend.
Yeah.
He's not an enemy. I have no ill will towards him. Think he's a great guy, he does a great job. But like, we don't have a thing. What's my man from The Ringer that you know very well? Brian Curtis. Seen him, met him, friendly hellos. I don't know the dude. We're not friends.
Yeah.
Russillo. I'm not Russillo's friend. I know him. I've been on his show. I've been on his podcast. Like, that's a level. Like, I've worked with the dude and would gladly work with him again in the future. But I can't call him my friend.
Yeah.
I'm gonna text this dude. I've never been in his house. I've never been out to go get drinks explicitly with him. So, but we worked through that ESPN. And I was on his show a bunch of times. It happens, man. Like, I think people, if you start thinking about your workplace, there are dozens of people that you know from work, that you see at work, that you work with at work, you work with well at work. but you have no extracurricular connection to.
I completely agree, and I think it maps onto. I always have described it as you go into your office floor, the cubicles, and there's Gary, and you know Gary's a Packers fan, so you're like, Packers got him last weekend, but you don't ever hang out one on one with Gary. At the same time, at the Athletic, when just starting out, we were on the road as the people covering the Warriors, and it was Marcus, Slater, Kawakami, and we were all in that media room in Houston, and it was like we were on a spaceship. Like, you do this, you do that. Like, man, the torpedoes. It was just
right.
I felt like we were friends, but I think that's an unusual circumstance. I don't.
Well, but I would say that also bears a resemblance to NBA teams, because this happens also where people, because they're with each other all the time, and they have like common enough interests, they do become friends. And then somebody gets traded or goes to another team, and then the friendship ends. I forgot Grant Hill was talking about that. Like, that takes a certain kind of awareness of what your life is to be able to adjust to, this was like my locker mate. We used to hang out and we were friends all the time. And then I got traded and now we don't talk anymore.
Yeah,
because I have to form these new relationships in the place where I'm at now.
Well, this might be cutting a little too close to the bone of people I know, but it was interesting observing from afar Bogut say something about, to bring it all back to the practice setting, about a Warriors practice, not name who was involved, but you didn't take a genius to know who was involved when Klay Thompson jumped on the public Instagram comments, very upset that this had been shared. The circumstance was a nameless Warriors player was mocking Kelly Oubre loudly, sarcastically, talking about how the Warriors had the finals MVP and a former All-Star coming off the bench in Andre Iguodala, but Oubre in his public comments did not want to come off the bench. That was shared on Bogut's podcast by Bogut. He didn't say who it was. Again, it doesn't take a genius to see who it was.
I think that's Klay inexperienced in this space, right? Because if you look at Klay Thompson's career, he's usually not part of these types of stories. So he becomes a part of this story, and because he has no experience, he jumps out not realizing your track record of never reacting to any of this stuff that internally goes external.
Yeah.
Is working against you in that moment. Because why is this the one? Why is this the one that you felt the need to shout out? No, it's not true, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I thought was interesting was that he appeared to be leaning on this idea that athletes are very invested in, which is that there is a code and a brotherhood. There's a fraternity.
Yes.
You are not supposed to reveal. Absolutely. You're not supposed to reveal the internal workings of what's behind the curtain to the world. Now, the problem is Bogut's in media.
But that's different from friendship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's different from friendship. But it's interesting because should that extend beyond retirement, Bogut's in media. He doesn't want to be like, and we could name the names, but we won't. A lot of players who get into media and are boring because players are boring on these broadcasts and in these studio shows because they are adhering to the code.
Yeah. But Ethan, the ones who don't, they all catch hell for it, right? Like Charles Barkley said many a time, like, Michael Jordan isn't my friend anymore because I told the truth about the way he was running that team and he didn't like it, right? Marcellus Wiley catches a lot of shit for things that he says on his show. It's a long list of athletes who, when they become outspoken like that, and especially if they're revelatory, right, there is a feeling that you broke some sort of omerta.
Yeah,
but the reality is, Kendrick Perkins is another one. He's like, well, he's got guys that have been upset at him because of things that he said out loud. But he's like, at the end of the day, like, I have a job to do. I want to keep this job. I want to be successful in this job. I want to make money. And so part of that is being able to kind of pull back the curtain. Hell, I've caught in that shit, man. Shaq told me. He said, you can't say that shit. I said, was I wrong? He said, you're not wrong, but you can't say that shit. It wasn't about him, was it? I was talking about someone else. Can't remember who it was. But the idea was, in the case of me talking about some fairly big name player who was upset at me because of stuff I said. I was Sedano was with me. This was the day I believe they retired Shaq's jersey in Miami. Because it was me and George Sedano. We're in the tunnel. We see Shaq and say, what's up, Dada? And they say, hey, man, you need to stop saying all that shit. I said, what did I say? He said, this, that, and the other. And I said, was I wrong? He's like, you can't say that. I said, was I wrong, though? He said, no, you weren't wrong. But you can't be the one that says it.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, I mean, that's the feeling of it. But the problem is sometimes when there is that assumption is, why does it benefit me? Like, how does this whole Omerita benefit me in the aggregate? And am I being a sucker by buying into it when it benefits people who are doing great and I'm not really getting all that much out of it? That's kind of how. Yeah, I just
for whom, like what type of person would you put in that kind of in that scenario?
Well, maybe this is not totally analogous, but I'm remembering when the Warriors players had this idea of you should apologize to KD.
Right.
Because, you know, KD's going to be in the league for a long time. Yeah. He's going to be a big star. Do you want him mad at you? He can help you. And I was just thinking, I don't understand how, like, what am I really getting out of this? Not that this has much to do with the ethics and the morality and journalism, but just like, let's talk about just basic quid pro quo. Like, what am I getting out of this?
I would say, what you would be getting out of it is, one, obviously it's not just KD is a star. He is arguably one of the three best players in the league, right? Yeah. So, like, that's someone who not only has incredible reach, but also influence, not just within your industry, but also influence with other players, younger players who are coming in, who might be seeking guidance or kind of acceptance from him. And as they are his disciples, he tells them, that dude, fuck that dude. So now you're on that fuck that dude list, which only grows because a player with his kind of influence can have that. So I think there is a big picture there that I understand why they would say that to you. There's also an argument that you could say, I'll live. Because there are people we know of, people who, by the way, who's much more necessary to have good relationships than you, the intellectual, thoughtful writer. Like, the newsbreakers need those relationships more than anything, right?
It's a different thing.
Yeah, we know of newsbreakers, or I should say a newsbreaker, who doesn't have a great reputation among players. And I believe that's directly correlated to things that he wrote and said about LeBron earlier in his career. And what ends up happening is, as LeBron grows and becomes more influential, and now, and he obviously did a great job of this, of reaching out, connecting with prep stars who might be in the league at an early level to kind of get them under his umbrella. And now those guys are like that dude.
Yeah.
But that hasn't stopped, right? It hasn't ruined anyone's career, because at the end of the day, so many people in the league. And while there are going to be those who are going to worship at the altar of a LeBron or Durant and do as they say, there are others who are like, I don't give a fuck. I've never had a problem with this guy, or this woman. I'll be cool with them.
The newsbreaker game is interesting because there are people who specialize in the player sphere of it, and there are people who specialize in the exec tier of it. And it's probably good if you have a bit of everything if you're in that particular game. I don't stand in judgment of it. That's a hard way to make a living, man.
It's incredibly difficult, and there's no rest, and there's no off season, and there's no respite, right? Is it respite or respite?
How do you say that? I mean, whatever it is, I remember Mark Stein saying that he hadn't seen a movie in a theater in over a decade.
Yeah.
And he might have said that about a decade ago. So he might not have seen a movie in a theater, and now nobody can. So he just missed his shot for 20 years.
It's gone forever. It's gone forever, Steiny. But like Stein's a great example of like an all-around great human being who's great at his job. And I would say, and this is my friend, so I say this with all affection, there is an underlying layer of constant misery that that guy lives in.
Yeah.
And I think that resonates with all of them. All of them. Even guys like, I don't know if he'd ever say it or even show it, like Chris Haynes. Again, close personal friend, one of my favorite people in the industry, excellent at his job. But, like, I know, I have to know, because I know it from my perspective. I'm not a newsbreaker. I work a lot. I don't work as much, I would say, as newsbreakers. But I know, I feel the tug of what my family, my kids, am I around for this stuff? Am I present, even if I'm physically present? And Chris is a family man. He's got to go through this. He's got to go through it. They all do.
Yeah. It's
by the way, it's what makes, and this is an unfair statement, but I would posit this is what makes Shams like such a killer. His age dictates, hey man, he's at that age where, man, I don't have attachments in life. I don't have kids.
But he gave up certain things.
Sure, early on. Like
he stopped playing pickup basketball because the phone needs to be on you all the time.
Yeah.
And these might seem like little things and trivial things to people listening, thinking, hey, I hate my job. I'd love to be a big shot newsbreaker. But when you start really thinking about it, about the idea of never having free time, because that is where they live, because news can happen anytime. You know, a player can get into a fight with another player, like we're talking about, in a practice. And you have your bigger moments, you have your busy season, you have your free agency, you have your trade deadline, but news can break at any point, and you are expected, there is pressure on you, especially at ESPN, where they're angry over something that I wouldn't even think is a big deal to miss on, like Alex Rodriguez being in an ownership group buying the Timberwolves. Who fucking cares if you're not a Timberwolves fan? But even that, it's something they obsess over, and there's this idea of blame. If you miss on it, that's a hard place to be in emotionally.
I think the feeling there is that they think that it reflects poorly. It's like if I found out that Waz was going to the Ringer from, you know, some other, I thought that was your boy, right? Like that's that they think about it like that. They think, well, if you work here, we're supposed to be boys, but they don't realize. And I ran into this a little bit towards the end. They don't realize my friendships are my friendships.
Yeah.
Right. Like
it's a weird way to view life. Yeah. Why aren't you using this?
Yeah. Or the opposite. Why are you helping them? It's my friends. It's my friends.
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird plight. It's the in Heat, Al Pacino, all I am is what I'm going after kind of existence of constantly chasing the story, worrying about what happens if you don't get it. And what's interesting to me, I've thought about eventually writing about this, but I don't even know if I should say it. It's weird watching certain coverage without the disclosure of the conflicts of interest. And the fans are probably owed that. Probably owed that. You can have those.
I don't think they care because, like, to me, every broken piece of news is a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
No one is just, like, going through a Rolodex like, this person's a reporter. Ethan so-and-so is going to sign with the such-and-such, right? Like, no one's doing that. They're telling people that they have a relationship with, and the quid pro quo is, I give you shit, you say nice things about me, or you paint this in the most positive light towards me, right?
I'm saying in that context, but it gets a little weird when we're watching, let's say, Zion Williamson, CAA. The New York Knicks, CAA'd out, CAA all over. Mm-hmm. I'd say like most, if not the great bulk of reporters and media people at ESPN NBA, CAA. And a lot of these people are our friends. I don't begrudge them. I was once briefly repped by CAA and I had a cup of coffee with them. I think generally if you're not a writer who's destined for TV, it sort of doesn't make sense, but whatever. It just seems like thing.
There are other things if you're not a, that you could probably fill in there.
Yeah. Well,
but go ahead.
But it just seems like that sort of thing should maybe be divulged to the public, that sort of connection when you're saying things like, oh, you know, maybe Zion should join the New York Knicks. It just seems like at the very least, I know that maybe it's sports and there are no rules and there is no morality, but that's something that I believe in order to have some trust with the fans, with the viewers, there should be an admission of that.
Well, you know what you're describing.
What?
It's not morality. It's journalism.
Mm.
You're describing journalism as
by the
a journalist.
Way, by the way, at The Athletic, we probably have CAA. They're everywhere. Tentacles everywhere. I'm just saying, you know, if we can divulge. But you were saying journalism.
Journalism. Yeah. I think at the very least, if you're repped by that same agency, you got to disclose that. In the same way that sometimes you'll see like a review of like an ESPN or undefeated story that's about like the impact of Black Panther. And then at the end, it'll say Black Panther distributed by Marvel, which is owned by Disney, as is Undefeated.
Yeah.
Right. Like that. That's what you're looking for. I think that's fair. I think if you're, I mean, it's one thing to say, it's one thing for me to say, let's say I'm cool with Bill Duffy. Right. At the end of the day, I don't work for Bill Duffy. I don't work for a company that owns BDA Sports and my company. I'm just cool with them. I don't think you have to disclose that stuff. But if it's like, this is like a rep by some, the same people rep me. So I'm at ICM, right? That's the agency that reps me and they do a phenomenal job. Shout out to Lou Oppenheim and the rest of the guys. But Jerry Seinfeld is rep by ICM. So if I, in my capacity as a media member, journalist, right, I write a long, flowery prose on the new Seinfeld stand-up or the new season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, like, it would probably behoove me to mention that we're rep by the same agency.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe the response is, there are no rules. Who cares? Doesn't matter. I just think as far as best practices go, you should probably do it. And then people can make whatever conclusion they want to make, right? They go, hey, I know that these guys have this connection, but I read the article and I found the evidence in it compelling, you know, regardless of the conflict of interest. But I think there's something to the hiding of it that's an issue. And it's interesting because it's not like players will hide who they're affiliated with.
Let me take it a step further. Not only the hiding of it, but if it's implied or anywhere, they bristle in the same way that Klay Thompson bristled at the Bogut thing.
That's our omerta. You're not supposed to do that. The conversation we're having, this is not a conversation that we theoretically should be having. There will be bristlings for just that. Just talking about it.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah, at this point.
Hey, if you got a problem with who you're rep by, then you need to come to ICM where we don't have those problems. See, I did that.
Suge Knight.
Yeah. Your agency's all in the video, dancing.
Making you write about I was just trying to name some. The problem is CAA's got a lot of great players. So I was trying to name a CAA player that, that wasn't too good. And just nothing came up. Like, I was going to say
Paul George. That's so mean.
Making you write about Paul George.
Oh, my God. How about Paul George, by the way? He's mad that Chris Paul didn't shake his hand. So now you go. Next question of, like, how hard is it to guard Chris Paul?
I mean, I guess how could he salvage his reputation? Remember when he was just taken off like a rocket ship?
Oh my God, it's so easy. That's the irritating part about all of this, Ethan, is that it's easy at its core. If you really think about it, like, this shit ain't hard, bro. All you gotta do is, like, okay, so let's take last night, for example. Like, Chris Paul snubbed you on the handshake or whatever. Okay, that's kind of a fucking douche move, but all right. You go to the press conference. How hard is it to contain a player like Chris Paul? He's a great player.
Yeah.
And,
You drown it in boring.
He's a great player. And so, you know, we had some objectives as a team that we wanted to get out there. Some we got done, some we didn't. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We'll get them next time. That's it, man. It's like all of these things. They were like, well, what was he supposed to say? It's easy. I'll tell you exactly. There's no scenario where something happened and a guy said something that was explosive that there wasn't another way to do it. That was just, like you said, drown it in boring. Yeah. Just pour mayonnaise all over it. Just, The moment you say next question, you're inviting the shitstorm. And I always say this. Now, some people like the shitstorm. Yeah. Gilbert Arenas loves the shitstorm.
Draymond, give me shitstorm. But it's an intentional shitstorm. Draymond would talk to us. If you're talking about revealing connections and behind the curtain, Draymond in the locker room, back when I was a beat writer, would say, hey, when I get up on that podium, ask me about this because I want to go off about this. And I would think to myself, well, that doesn't do anything for me, but okay, I'll watch the show. It's going to be entertaining. He's going to blast somebody.
Right. And that's probably next level, right? Where he's walking you behind the scenes, right? Some of these guys don't. Gilbert didn't do that shit. Gilbert just did his shit. And you know why? Because Gilbert truly didn't care. Like, it was funny to him. All of it was funny. Yeah. I bring this up every single time. The Jabari Crittenden gun situation where Gilbert has the three guns on the chair and tells Javaris to pick one, and Javaris says, I don't have to pick one. I got my own, pulls out the gun. The locker room evacuates. Everybody runs. Everybody except for one person. Gilbert. Do you know what Gilbert did?
I'm just picturing him like the Joker, putting both hands on the gun and putting it to his head. That's what I'm picturing right now.
That'll probably be his second then. No. What Gilbert did was he laughed. He laughed. He sat there and he laughed.
Oh, Javaris, what would I be without you? You complete me.
Oh, that's a pretty good Joker. That's a pretty good.
Good evening, Commissioner.
What's my man's name? What's my man's
R.I.P.
name?
R.I.P. Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. There you go. Yeah. No, but it's that's the reality. It's like, now Gilbert's an extreme example, obviously.
Yeah.
But the point is, this is someone who truly. Oh my God, they're saying mean things about, like again, it's like, oh, Dame, oh, wasn't Dame time that time. Yeah, it was Dame time when I sent your ass home. Oh, good luck making the playoffs. Well, good luck when, you know, you're trying to, well, my shoulders were hurting and I had surgery and that was the week that I found out they canceled the Wayans brothers. And like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
What a reference, by the way. Underrated sitcom.
Yeah. Like, but you can't be that. You can't be both. You can either be, I'm a guy that's above all this and I give boring answers, or I'll give fun answers that are funny and lighthearted and either self-deprecating or don't poke holes at anybody.
Steph has the best because he drowns it in boring, and if he doesn't like it, he does the I would say rich kid little clipped laughter, and he'll go, it's funny. Like, it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you think about that thing that guy said about you? It's funny. And when it becomes a quote that you write down.
Ethan, Ethan, for as many good impressions as you did, that was a terrible one, because the key to Steph is to first grab either like a rubber tube or maybe a belt and like tie it around your arm, bite it so it's really nice and tight, get those veins popping, and then get a healthy dose of heroin and shoot yourself into that popping vein.
I can't imitate Steph. I can't do the voice. But, oh God, Steph, please stop this. Here. Please. You're giving me post-traumatic stress to transcribing.
I mean, it's funny.
Oh, Jesus.
That's Steph.
Transcribing thousands of words of Steph Curry interviews at that pace he talks at. Talk about drowning and boring. I mean, yeah. You know what's great to transcribe was Mark Jackson, because he would speak theatrically and slow.
Yeah.
That was perfect. Like
he preached sermons.
Yeah. That was the best. That was the pinnacle. But yeah, I can't do a Steph. I can't do the languid Steph voice, but it's intentional. He's trying to break it down in boring. And for the most part, it works. And when he's mad, it's clipped. It's clipped laughter. The other one I noticed, Kevin Love got mad at a fan. I was just thinking in the grand stereotypes that we're chronicling. He got mad. I think the fan said something horrible. Somebody said something awful. So I'm not at all making light of that part. But he said very classy. I do think in the realm of white people who do well for a living.
I said Kevin Love.
Did I accidentally say Kevin Durant?
Yeah, he did. See, I'm always on his mind. See, I was listening to his podcast and he brought my name up for no reason.
Let's rewind that. Jade, you can rewind that not to confuse the listener. I don't know if Jade will catch this. But Kevin Love reminded me of for a certain sort of social strata of in the white realm. And it made me feel poor because I'm white, but I don't use this one, but I recognize it. When a fan said something awful to him on Twitter, said very classy sarcastically. The very classy. That's another one right there. When you're angry.
That's you know what that is? That comes from the Back to the Future school of George McFly walking down the hallways of Hill Valley High. They stick the kick me sign on his back and everyone keeps kicking him and he doesn't realize why. And then when he falls down, he sees the paper. He rips it off. He's like, oh, ha ha, guys, very mature. Which in high school is a grade A way to just like confirm you will be picked on for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's like
real mature, guys.
It's like when you eat something spicy and they always say water makes it worse. Does it actually make it worse? Do we have a ruling on that?
You got that's why, like, when you get sprayed with tear gas, they give you milk.
Yeah, milk's better. That's what I know from the Hot Ones YouTube interview show. Let's close up maybe or address your Phoenix Suns, Amin. Your Suns, speaking of Paul George and Chris Paul.
I don't know if anyone know this. I bought them.
Well, they had cratered so much in value that you could swoop in on them. Well, your local Suns, we could say. What do we attribute this to? They look amazing. They're winning big games. They beat the Clippers. Title contender. Did something internally happen? Is this sustainable? What are your thoughts?
I think first and foremost, the groundwork that Monty Williams laid last year was given an opportunity to keep building. Right? Typically what's happened in Phoenix is nobody has been allowed to kind of just build. Just build. It doesn't matter whether we end the season 500 or 20 games. Just let us build. Let us establish. This is how we want to do things. Let's not be interfered with. Let's just build. And so Monty and I guess James Jones were given that opportunity for the first time in probably more than, I mean, even us, we had it built. That's the difference. But it was interference nonstop. And when I say us, I mean Steve Kerr, David Griffin, Alvin Gentry, that kind of group that I worked with in Phoenix. So just the letting people have the room to do their thing, that's huge, right? I think Devin Booker getting older and beginning to realize there are things that he wants that aren't found, you know, on Sunset or in a commercial or, you know, on South Beach, like at Live or Story or whatever. You reach that point where you're like, oh, everyone else is starting to like build their legacies and I'm still here. Like, well, my claim to fame is I get paid a lot of money and, you know, I'm dating a Kardashian, right? Then you add on to all that, because I do believe if Chris Paul wasn't there, there was absolutely a risk of attrition. If they don't start out right out the gate, they lose a couple of games, if Booker feels like nothing has changed, there's a high chance they don't make it till Valentine's Day. And that guy wants out, right?
Right.
Chris Paul coming in accelerates the winning, right? Does it two ways. One, just by simply being, he's a great player. He's an elite player. He is the best point guard in the league. He is the purest point guard in the league. He makes players better. He puts them in a position to be better. He not only does that just by his play, but he will also instruct and tell and vocalize and verbalize, right? Be there. Cut now, wait, da-da-da, right? And on both sides of the ball. Then there's another level of this of intangibles, leadership, holding people accountable, which has been an issue. And then most importantly, having the reputation to hold people accountable. I ain't one of your little friends who was drafted a year before you or a year after you, who might look at you as a peer or whatever. I'm a Hall of Famer. I stop right now. I'm going to Springfield, right? I'm already mentioned as one of the top 10 to ever play this position. So when he speaks, and I'm still good, it's not like this is a scrapbook. When he speaks, it carries with it a level of gravitas that, man, they haven't had a player like that in Phoenix probably since Steve. So Steve Nash. So I think when you combine all that stuff, you get, and then the last part, and this is the part Suns fans don't want to hear. Health.
Yeah.
You look at the four teams who were in the conference finals last year. Denver, Lakers, Celtics, Heat. How are they doing? Not so great. And why? Because they haven't been healthy. And why? Because they had a short offseason. And then look at the four teams right now, the chalk in both conferences. Brooklyn, Philly, Utah, Phoenix. What do they have in common? They all got done super quick, right? Super quick. First round for Brooklyn and Philly and Utah, the Suns in the bubble. That's not a coincidence. That's not a coincidence, right? Like having the benefit of the doubt of rest and health. Now, obviously, in the case of Brooklyn, like they haven't had the health, but they still manage because they've got a wealth of talent. But when we talk about Phoenix and Utah, they're absolutely benefiting from being healthy at a time when no one else has been healthy.
I feel like the Lakers are getting hurt at the right time. And I feel like it's kind of shaping up well for them. High ankle sprain, you don't want to have the thing LeBron had, but yeah. It seems like they're taking the maximum amount of rest and this is the part of the season to miss, and so maybe they will be refreshed and ready to go for the playoff run. And sometimes I think we overrate, especially in recent years where the regular season seems to matter less, we overrate what's happening in the regular season. We're like, oh, they are, oh my God, they're ranked third on offense, as though you can just carry that into the playoffs and do something with it.
Well, that's what I always talk about, right, is that like they've got the – we talk about it with the Bucks. It's like, yeah, they've got the best defense in the league. Yeah, but like you got to understand, when you look at someone's defensive rating, that's based on all the shitty teams I play, right? Even if you filter it to like, okay, what about like the teams that are in the playoffs against teams that are above 500 or whatever? There is still a little bit of a selection bias, right? That does not apply to you when you go to the playoffs and you got to play the same team over and over again who aren't going in with their basic cookie cutter offense or defensive sets. No, they're doing everything tailored to fuck with you. That makes it different. And so sometimes, yes, it's great to be elite defensively, right, by the numbers. But sometimes we're looking for your ability to guard different things. Great example of this would be Utah. Utah is, as of today, where are they?
Something
top
amazing.
Three, probably.
Yeah.
Number one. Number three defense. They're number three defensively. But I know that's all built on a very specific, dare I say, rigid defensive system. That the moment I can game plan and pull Rudy Gobert away from the basket, which is easy because teams have literally done it every year in the playoffs, the last however many years Utah has been in the playoffs, game over. It's the equivalent of what the Warriors did to Memphis in 2015. All right, I'm going to put Andrew Bogut on Tony Allen. Game over. Because you don't have counters. You don't have the ability to counter. Your defense is one defense. Your defense is hoping we're going to play this traditional style of basketball. The moment the Warriors said, yeah, we're going to fight guerrilla warfare. Well, I don't have anything to deal with that. I'm used to like, you're on that side. We're on this side. Charge. That's how we fight. Yeah. Well, guess what? No, we're not. So that's why it's important to be able to kind of discern between numbers and reality in that sense.
And there's also just when these players are engaged versus when they aren't so engaged. Many of them are capable defenders when they give a shit. And it completely changes the situation. If you think about the magnificent defensive performance that the Cavs pulled off against the Warriors in 2016 to close that 3-1 gap. I mean, a lot of those guys who were playing physical defense on Steph Curry and minding their P's and Q's and knowing when to switch were not guys who knew how to do that when they weren't so locked in. You know, J.R. Smith was not locked in like that in the regular season. So that completely changes the equation as well. And it's just, I think there's a divergence increasingly between what we see in the regular season and what we see in the postseason.
Yeah, and there are players that do better, and there are players that need that extra amount of pressure. And sometimes it's just, hey, man, in the slog of the day-to-day of a regular season, it's hard. Not only is it hard to get up for these games, but sometimes it's just hard to make it work, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's square peg, round hole, right? It's like, well, this is how we guard it. Well, if you're going to guard it like that, you're going to get destroyed. Oh, well, right? Or if you're going to play us like that, you're going to get locked down. But when we get to the playoffs and we begin to customize, and by the way, that's another reason why veteran teams do better than young teams. Because I can go to a veteran and say, yeah, I know we spent all year long guarding it this way. We're going to do it this way. And vets are going to be like, cool, because I've done this before. You know, how you want to do it? You want to do it this way? You want to do that? I could do anything. They're like short order cooks. And then the kids are like, well, at the academy, we were like, no, ain't no at the academy. Like, this is how we're going to do it now because that's what this situation calls for.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point on just the versatility of experience and one of the reasons why, to quote Kevin Arnovitz, grown-ass men win in the playoffs and win basketball games. That is how it has gone. Do we have any additional thoughts on the Steph Curry Warriors situation? I know I touched on it in Warriors plus minus. I made an argument. I want to bounce it off you. I wrote an article, and my general thinking is this. I feel like Steph Curry has played so well that he has brought more pressure on the Warriors than if he was playing a little bit worse, which is funny because if you think about it, him playing well kind of takes pressure off of them. I mean, that was sort of the thinking going in. Take some pressure off. It's okay. We have a longer window than maybe we thought. Maybe we pick these two first round draft picks upcoming and we can wait for them because Steph's not just going to collapse. There's more left in the tank, obviously. But then he took it from an 8 to a 10, and it's, they're squandering an MVP-level player right now with a roster that's not good enough. I think maybe you got to win now to have a shot at all this. What say you to that theory?
No, I agree with you. I think that it's painfully obvious watching him play that, like, what are we doing? Again, I've run with this joke for 2 years now, but it's like this guy is, like I said, MVP caliber. And who are we giving him? Well, we gave him Maple Jordan and Tsunami Poppy and the guy that went to the Oakland Tech and the brother-in-law and Mulder and Scully. And like, are you fucking shitting me?
Mulder and Scully. It really does feel like the movie Major League, where it's like, well, this guy's in town.
Yeah.
And I think Toscano Anderson's done good, and I think he'll be an NBA player.
He has. Absolutely, he has.
But just like Wild Thing pitched well, you know?
the game where he had the concussion, if he doesn't get concussed, they win that game. He left, and they blew that game. That's not a knock on him. I think any one of those guys are fine. The problem is that's the roster. That's not my eighth guy or my ninth guy. These are like 2, 3, 4 that I'm naming out here in order. So that's the problem that you're dealing with. Is Andrew Wiggins awful? No. Andrew Wiggins is what I thought he'd be. Like a Harrison Barnes-esque type player. Guess what? Harrison Barnes is your fifth best player. Guess what happens? You're fucking breaking records. You're winning 73 games. Right? Yeah. Harrison Barnes is your second best player? How are they doing in Sacramento?
Yeah. He's had a good season too.
He's got a good season, but it's just like, all right. But like in terms of like, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to have a good season individually? Or are we trying to achieve the highest possible thing? Same thing with Oubre. Same thing with, like, all of these guys are playing a role that is 1 to maybe 3 or 4 positions above where they should be.
Yeah, this is the Peter Principle team, including Looney, right, who I love.
Right. And
Looney be your best center? I don't know.
Right, exactly. Like, Kevon Looney, who's been a championship contributing player. But if he's, like, your best option, man, you're fucking in trouble. Right. And so this goes back to kind of bring it full circle to the Andrew Bogut, Klay Thompson thing, because the whole thing started with Oubre is a free agent. Steve Kerr, would you like to see him back? Yes, I would. How would that work with Klay coming back? Well, I envision it would be our starting line would be Steph, Klay, Wiggins, Draymond, and whoever the center is, either Wiseman or Looney or Pascal or whoever it is. And then Oubre would be our first guy off the bench. Which is, again, I think the rational, like, yes, that's how you want him to be, to kind of, that you want the talent to push him down to the role that he's best suited to play. Oubre responds publicly and says, I ain't no bench player. Because Oubre lives in a level of enlightenment that's just short of championship. He's still, like, worried about who got the start and his name called out and, you know, walking a catwalk or whatever, right? Or a runway or whatever it's called. So that's why when that incident happened, allegedly, where Klay said, we got a finals MVP, former All-Star who was okay with coming off the bench. Who the fuck is Kelly Oubre with Kelly Oubre in the room? Right? That's the ill part of the story. It's not that there were Warriors vets grumbling about how they grumbled in his face. Who the fuck are you? How dare you walk into this locker room, look at those banners. We built this goddamn building. Like, you know, I said, the house that Ruth built. This is literally the house that they built. They built this arena off of some of the greatest basketball ever played. They're right here. It's not legends. It's not in black and white. It's not pictures on a wall. Those assholes are in that locker room with you right now. So to have the temerity to say, I ain't no bench player. Who the fuck are you to tell us that you ain't no bench player? What have you done? What have you accomplished either as an individual or on a team in this league? Nothing. Nothing. But that all goes back. So when you say Steph, has he put pressure on them? Absolutely, because it highlights these things. This is with whom you chose. And by the way, I go back to this again and again. Garrett Temple went for $5 million.
Wow.
Kyle Anderson makes... what does he make? Kyle Anderson. Boo, 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 boo. Oh, come on. Now we're going to do this. Don't you hate when you request something.
The point is that former Grizzlies vets could be had for good deals.
$9.5 million for Kyle Anderson. What's my man from Indiana? Former Warrior.
Holiday. Robinson the third?
Holiday. Holiday makes shy of $6 million.
Yeah.
Like this is what we're talking about. Like, there are dudes in this game who are productive and high IQ and understand, most importantly, their place.
They've gotten the Greg Popovich, you talk about the Spurs, they've gotten over themselves. We have guys who have gotten over themselves.
And meanwhile, you got this guy talking about, I ain't no bench player.
Well, to be fair, it happened a little while ago, and maybe that scolding influenced him to accept coming off the bench, where beyond the debacle against the Mavericks, he's been playing better. But it does speak to something about not having pieces that are aligned with the proper timeline and the proper mindset. And even
That's the whole point, is that the people here are not championship mindset. These are still people trying to find themselves. Whether it's find themselves spiritually, like young Mr. Oubre, or find themselves literally am I an NBA player or not? Like Mulder and Toscano Anderson. Like, they're not at the level like, I'm here, I'm a bit. Like, they're not David West or Sean Livingston or Leandro Barbosa. Or that, like, that was what your supporting cast was. I keep going back to this. Yes, they were stacked at the top levels of elite talent. But their supporting cast was fucking top notch.
Yeah.
These Pachulia, Bogut, like, these were all high level role players.
High level, and there's a confidence where there's just a difference between trying to execute a plan and trying to stay in the league in terms of adrenaline, fear factor. Just it's a big difference. And yeah, I think that they made some mistakes as far as putting the roster together. Obviously, Clay getting hurt put a ceiling on the season. But I do think that as much as – and I love a draft. I have trepidation about trading a pick. You could have what happened to the Nets when they trade the pick that became Damian Lillard. But it does seem like going into this offseason, they've got to make a win-now deal. How it has to be.
But what is that deal? Like, to me, this is what I go back to. If you tell me we go get Kawhi Leonard right now and it's going to cost this, I'm like, all right, go get Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go get somebody that's not going to really move the needle, and this is the part where you got to be honest. You have to be honest with yourself. If I add this star player, is that enough?
Probably not.
If you mean honest, probably not.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends. I mean, people talk Bradley Beal. It seems like he doesn't want to leave, but even that one, that's a redundancy.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you say Giannis, all right, man, let's talk about this. Yeah. But like, for instance, Zach Harper said this?
Zach Harper. This is part of the major leagueification of the Warriors. Where you get Toscano Anderson, and you get a media guy who can really shoot.
Right, but like,
and everybody pulls a little piece off of the Joe Lacob suit in the locker room. Yeah, what did Zach say? By the way,
you trade like Wiseman for Siakam. You go get Siakam. Like, to me, I'd have to be damn sure that Wiseman is never like from a intellectual IQ level. Is never going to excel. He'll be a good player.
Do so much reconnaissance, so many spies, so many birdies in the Tampa Bay Raptors to know what the hell happened with Siakam. See,
I'm willing to entertain that risk if I know, I'm sure, look, the rest of the world don't know yet, but this kid Wiseman, he's got a ceiling. He's Hassan Whiteside, right? Will get numbers and can exist on a good team. But when you need him, you absolutely need him to execute. He's incapable. I'm not saying that about the kid. I'm saying that's the feeling I would have to have to say I'm trading away the 19-year-old number 2 overall pick 1 year into it for a guy who's underperforming on his contract.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a situation where it's one thing if they come to you and they say, look, this superstar wants out. We want a great package. But if you're shopping him, that diminishes the value. You're giving a tell that you don't think this guy's any good. And so that's a problem. I think they have to just hope that the postseason shakes something loose, right? The angst of defeat will make somebody want to leave. Somebody think it's not good enough, and they try to facilitate it. But it might just have to be that they get a normal role player or two, because maybe the superstar just isn't available. Because it does seem as though Curry's patience is infinite compared to the standard superstar, but there are probably limits on it. His deal's up in 2022. I don't think he wants to be Sisyphus for the rest of his career. So with that in mind,
who are you calling a sissy?
With that in mind, they need to accelerate that timeline if they can. Well, Amin.
This is the last point on this. The hardest part for the Warriors isn't should we trade Wiseman or not. The hardest part is you don't know the answer until you find out what condition Clay is in.
Yeah.
That's everything. It's all hinging on that.
That is a crazy unknown. I'm optimistic about it just because I think if you're big and you can shoot, that's not going to go away. Now, is he going to be the stout defender he once was? I don't think
But that's a big part of the allure, right? If we're being honest, the big part of the allure of Clay is that he guards the shit out of people. And so if I lose that, if you're telling me I don't have that anymore, all he does is shoot, like, all right, that's cool. I mean, he could still be very, very productive offensively, but like, is a productive offensively but non-factor defensively Klay Thompson, is that good enough? I don't know.
They're not good enough to win a championship with the talent they have right now. They need
and the conversations we're really having is how much do you jeopardize your future to make a pipe dream come true?
Pressure. It really will depend on what's out there. But I just think that if this is what you're getting out of Steph, it does get you a lot of the way there. I mean, the other side of this is they don't have enough talent right now as presently constructed, even with Clay coming back to win a championship. But it's a bit of a discombobulated league. The overwhelming favorite in the West has a superstar who's damn near in middle age, right, and suffered a fairly serious injury this season. And then after that, you looked at the ascendant Nuggets and you see what happened to Murray. It just seems like it's not so hard to at least get in the game, like the way the Spurs were always in the game, where maybe they weren't favored going into a season, but they were in that tier where they could do it and have enough veteran guile if a few bounces go correctly to get to the promised land. I don't think the Warriors are so far from that territory, but it will probably require making a move or two.
Agree.
Yeah, well, there you go. Agreement. Not much arguing on this particular podcast. I want to give a big thank you to Amin. It's always fantastic when he's on. Huge thank you to Jade. An apology to the listeners. I had a vacation, guys. You know, I had to go out into the woods. I mean,
whose idea was that? I don't see you as a camping kind of guy. To be honest,
I mean, your instincts are correct, as they often are on this one. But I'll tell you what, I did not. Look, I enjoyed the camping, the luxury camping, the Airstream.
Glamping. It's called glamping.
Glamping. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it, but what I really enjoyed was Bodega Bay, ladies and gentlemen, in the springtime. I mean, if I hit it big, if my lottery numbers line up right, I'm buying a Bodega Beach House.
Bodega Bay. That was the daughter of the corner store owner who used to man the counter.
It's also where they filmed Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. It's a big deal that happened there. I saw that church over there. Anyway, big thank you to Jade. Big thank you to the listeners. Big thank you to Amin. Big thank you to basketball. We're going to hit the playoffs pretty soon. We'll have more content coming at you. Check out The Athletic. Check out Amin. Amin, do your plugs. Where can we see what you're doing?
Well, first and foremost, you got to go to Cinephobe. That's the podcast where Zach Harper and I review movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. And we try to ascertain whether they are accurately poorly rated or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, wherever you get podcasts. Ethan, last week we broke top 20 on the Apple TV and film charts. So the podcast is picking up steam. Also, Metalark Media, the Dan Le Batard show. I'm on that from time to time. So download, subscribe, all that. Le Batard Show and Friends, or Le Batard and Friends feed, all those feeds. Also, SiriusXM NBA Radio, 10 to 1 Eastern. Cast feed Thursdays, Fridays, Sundays, and sometimes an extra day in the weekend there. It all depends.
There you go, everybody. Check it out. Take care. Stay safe. Jade, wake up. Wake up. Edit the podcast. See ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.